Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm Jared Padalecki.
And this is Jensen Ackles.
And you're listening to Winchester Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Winchester Radio tonight. We have an episode, a pretty cool episode to talk about tonight. Fourth one of season 15, titled Atomic Monsters, written by Davey Perez and directed by Renaissance man Jensen Ackles, who did a great job. I was just thinking of all the talents he has, why I called him a Renaissance man: acting, directing, music, singing, soccer playing, beer brewing, you know, you name it. He's got it going. I think he turned in a very good director, and he did a good job on this episode. I liked it a lot. I've been trying to decide if I liked it a lot because it was just better than the first couple of episodes. And what I have to compare it to in the bar for this season makes it really good. Or did I like it because it's just actually that good? And there were a lot of good parts to it. As usual, I'm a Big Brothers fan, so I was glad to see just Sam and Dean. That made it really great for me that there weren't any extra characters, regular characters, I should clarify, because we have guests, of course, that contributed to the Monster of the Week plot. But I was glad to see it just focusing on Sam and Dean. That made it better already for me. The question is, well, one of them, I can't figure out what atomic monsters are, why it's titled that. I mean, there's so many other things to talk about, but that's one thing I couldn't figure out. So maybe you all know. And
the production company.
What does it produce? Movies, TV, music? Like, why would this be called Atomic Monsters? Does it not relate? I'm just genuinely confused. I'm not trying to be argumentative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm having trouble with my audio. I'm going to call back in.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, like
Becky,
you,
do you have
Susan,
any idea what kind of company?
I have no idea. I was trying to figure that out myself. I don't know how the name relates to the episode. If somebody does know, if Vinny knows when she calls back, maybe she could tell us.
Yeah. Should it was a production company, I'm like, well, okay. But, excuse me. sorry. Yeah, up front, I've been sick, and if I suddenly disappear, it's because I'm in the midst of a coughing fit, and I'll be muting myself. Sorry about that. But, yeah, I don't know how it relates, and honestly, I'm not sure it merits that much discussion, but Finny calls back, and maybe she's got an idea. Anyway, we can go back and start talking about the episode. Oh, there she is. Let's find out. Hey, Finny, is that better?
Hello? Okay. So, sorry if my audio is not going to be great. I can't find my regular headphones. So I'm just using the speaker. But Atomic Monsters is a horror movie production company.
Oh, okay.
So they
do
like
vampire movies?
No, they do like the Annabelle franchise and stuff. Well, the Conjuring franchise, if I remember
correctly. Oh, okay. I like those movies. Okay, cool. I don't know how it relates to the episode, but cool.
I think it's just a horror thing.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, no, this was vampires, so okay. All right, who knows? Maybe it's just a favorite thing of Davey Perez, the writer. That's all right. Again, I'm not sure it merits a lot of discussion. It's just usually we can figure out.
I don't think there was anything that was like, yeah, I don't think it was anything that was like overly, I think they just thought it was clever, which it, I mean, it kind of is, I guess.
They are cool words when you put them together. They're cool.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that opening sequence, though. The whole red scene. I want to talk about that.
It was fabulous. Well, speaking of movies, it absolutely, and we know Jensen mentioned it, it references the John Wick movie franchise, which I have seen the first John Wick and part of the second, so I at least have a pretty good idea of what they're like. Have you all seen all three of them? Three, I think.
I've not seen any of them, but I've heard of them.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I missed that. What?
I'm sorry. We're talking about the John Wick movies, and I asked if you guys had seen them. I've seen the first one and the second part of the second one.
I've only seen the first one.
Okay. You know, they're batshit crazy. The second one is more batshit than the first one. They're absolute, if you like a good revenge, violence-filled tale full of guns and bullets, you'll love them. I have a hard time with the first one because of Keanu Reeves plays a former assassin and falls in love and leaves the assassin guild and marries this woman, falls in love, she gets sick and dies, and you find that out in the first 30 seconds, so it's not much of a spoiler. And then the day she dies, because she knew she was dying, she has a puppy sent to John Wick because she feels like he needs something to love so he won't fall back into this terrible life. And I have a hard time getting past the part with the puppy. I don't want to spoil it too much, but it's the reason he goes back into the business, and it just goes from there. He does eventually end up with another dog, by the way, and they're just full of violence. And I think Jensen was just liking the shootouts in them are absolute, like, balletic almost. And they're just relentless. Guns, bullets, knives, fists, martial arts, whatever. And he did a great job with that opening sequence. It was weird. It was a shock. It was creepy. I love the whole red light. We got to see Jensen still in his hiatus beard and different hair. It wasn't too long, but it was definitely different. It looked like the End outfit to me. And since we end up seeing a version of Samifer, definitely Sam back on drinking demon blood, it made sense. We have the return of a character from before, Benny Ty Olson, who I don't think was a vampire in that. I think somebody. I just think he was somebody in Dean's crew where they were attacking the bunker and trying to get to Sam. And I mean, it's just fun to see Dean even more badass than usual and taking everybody out. And then, but of course, the minute he runs into Sam, even though it's an unapologetic Sam for what he's done and what he's doing, he's not sorry to be back on demon blood. He's still, for me, he's still the best version of Lucifer. That's not Mark Pellegrino. He's cold and calm and calculating. And even then, Dean still tries to appeal to him, and he calls him Sammy, and he says, "Sammy, please." And he's still trying to save him after everything, and he doesn't. And Sam ends up killing him, breaking his neck. And I actually just squeaked when it happened. And even though you know it's got to be a dream or a vision of Sam's, it's still just awful to see. And poor Sam wakes up and he's freaked out as well. And I just thought it was great. What did you guys think?
It has to be an alternate universe, right? I think I'm thinking that the bullet, the God gun when Sam got shot, whatever it's doing to him, I think it's giving him visions of one of God's other universes, one of Chuck's alternate universes, because, like you said, Dean looked different. Benny was not a vampire. Sam is drinking demon blood again because, you know, Dean does say it's not you, Sam, it's the demon blood. So he's drinking demon blood, which was my I loved demon blood drinking Sam. I mean, those episodes were they're my favorite. So I'm loving seeing this, but I don't think it's our Sam. I don't think it's a future vision that he's seeing. It has to be, guessing, an alternate universe. Which makes me think, you know, Dean mentions what you did to Bobby and Jody, which makes me think maybe we'll get original Bobby back in one of these visions. I'm thinking we'll probably
see
Ruby again.
He was
again.
filming with Kim Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he mentions all that, so
yeah.
Could be.
So I'm thinking we'll get Jen and Ruby back.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think there's that's what I'm really thinking. I'm wondering if how this show's going to end, and with, or even maybe before the end, and it has a different ending. But and then with what we know, Becky read that Chuck wrote this ending that Becky read that she did not she didn't like, that maybe it has something to do with that, with them going to the alternate verse, or alternate Sam and Dean coming over here, or, you know, and bringing all hell with them. You know, I don't know, but that's the feeling I got. That's my theory right now. It'll probably change 20 minutes from now, but that's my theory right now.
Well, we'll still be on the air, so we can talk about it. We can talk about your new theory.
What did you guys think?
I think it's part of the same flash we got from the first episode when what's his face touched Sam's bullet wound. So it's the same. It's all part of the same sequence. So it's not necessarily a dream. It is something that's planting dreams or visions in Sam. But I do think it's really odd that it's not a Lucifer thing. Like it's a season four diversion of the narrative.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you could say you can't say season five because season five was Lucifer. This is just Demon Blood Sam. This is the Sam that was supposed to exist.
Right.
Instead of this was the Sam that we were supposed to get to stop Dean from going to hell. Because that was what Eric Kripke always said. His intention for Sam was for Sam to go full dark side to save Dean, and he didn't do it. This is basically what happens if you don't introduce season four. It's really not even an AU of season four. It's as if season four didn't happen the way that we know it.
It's an alternate universe thing?
Yeah, it's definitely an alternate universe. My interest is, I don't think they'll do this, but really, this goes back to, like, Katie Cassidy's Ruby. This is almost like what was supposed to happen with her Ruby and didn't happen. So, I don't know if they're, well enough aware of that, plus Katie's a little bit busy. You know, what with being on another show and getting her own spinoff.
Yep.
But, she might not be able to come back. but, yeah, to me, it's not even it is more of a, if season four, it's almost like if the writer's strike never happened, this is what would have happened. That's what it feels like more to me. Not so much an AU. It's not an AU of anything we saw. It's an AU of what we didn't see. But I do think it's an AU. It's this is what happens. Dean isn't around to save Sam. And Sam goes too far. what I'm curious about is, what does that mean? Like, I'm curious if it means anything, or if it's just a conscious thing for Sam to understand and for the brothers to understand, like, they have to stick together. Because I'm not entirely sure if it's the bullet wound doing something to Sam, or if it's just that he now has this connection with God to see the other stories.
I like that, yeah.
I wonder if the connection will get stronger and stronger and deeper and deeper. Will he get more and more visions or the stories of the other AUs?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that's a mid-season climax.
Will it work into beating God? Will it go to the halfway season point, or is this going to go all season long? Is this going to be?
I was just talking about this with Clarissa actually earlier, and she was saying, like, you know, end of season, and I was like, I'll be very shocked if the God storyline is the season climax, because I've never seen under Andrew Dabb's tenure for them to maintain what you think the story is about and maintain it through the end. It's always at like the three-quarter point, like a whole new storyline comes out of nowhere, and then at the like last episode and a half, then another whole new story comes out of nowhere out of that. So I'll be really, really surprised if it continues through the whole season. I think it's going to be the mid-season climax. The bullet wound, at least.
Mm-hmm.
I really think the bullet wound will be part of, like, episode 8, episode 9, and I think the bullet wound itself will probably be resolved no later than episode 10.
Is that the halfway point?
Yeah,
is that the halfway point, or is 10 when we come back? Is 10
neither.
When we come back in January, or is 10?
No,
10's going to be this half.
No.
I'm sorry.
The actual mid-season finale is supposed to be episode 8, and then episode 9, I believe, is when we come back. That's how it was last season.
Oh.
And I assume they're going to keep that same schedule. So last season it was 8 and 9.
Well, phooey. I wanted to see that soon.
Well, sooner than 10.
Well, that's true.
you wanted to wait a whole other. Episode.
Damn it!
I take it back. I'm wrong. I'm wrong. Last season it was 9 and 10, but I'm pretty sure this season is 8 and 9. I think I read that somewhere. That it's 8 and 9 this season.
All right. I was gonna say. Oh, there is a. There is a scene, I think it's in shaving people punting things, and there's a shot of Sam of her, Sam in the white suit.
Yeah, yeah.
So another AU, another vision. Some people were talking about how this one that was in this episode, Sam was dreaming or having vision. It was like he was watching, Dean's part of the story, and he was
Dean's point
watching
of view.
Dean's point
yeah,
of view.
Yeah, that's why I think it's less of a dream and more of a vision. But it's I don't know how to put it, but it's, I don't want to say implanted, because that just sounds weird. But yeah, implanted. But something that, you know, only comes, like, implanted in the subconscious comes out nocturnally. But that's why I think it's more of a vision than a dream, because he's dreaming as if he's watching himself. He's watching himself through Dean, but he's also seeing the Dean parts. He really doesn't see any of his own parts. So he doesn't even know, like, his part of the story.
Yeah, exactly. He's not dreaming, because when you dream, you don't see from other people's point of view, you see from your own point of view. So,
And
So I would imagine that's
and of course
my...
when you're sleeping.
I was going to say that might be what's scaring him the most, that he knows that that's mm-hmm. not a dream. Like a dream you can just kind of like blow off.
Right.
And when you're asleep, your inhibitions go down, and maybe, you know, while he's awake, he can push those flashes away or keep busy or something to keep them from leaking in or however they're happening. But of course, when you go to sleep, completely different story, and they're just coming out stronger. I wonder if they'll start happening more when he's awake and getting stronger. That'll be interesting.
I think so. I think that goes back to what I was saying about the mid-season. I think that's going to be mid-season where it starts. Like, you can already kind of see he's being a little harsher about things, which is very, like, out of character for Sam. Like, when they're talking at where the girl Tori was
to the parents.
Where her body was found. Well, that too, but when they're talking, when he's just talking about everything's the end of the world to these people, and it's not the end of the world, and it's a very harsh way of speaking for Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, it's interesting that it's Benny, because Sam's never forgotten that Dean had Benny for a friend. And he says in the church and sacrifice, you know, I'm it'll be okay until you pick a vampire over me. You know, who's going to be next for you? You know, I keep letting you down. Are you going to pick another vampire? So I don't think he's ever forgotten that, even though Dean has over and over told him that nobody comes before him and proven it over and over. So it's interesting choice of Benny.
Well, I'm not going to put a whole lot of stock in that, because it wasn't Benny from the beginning. It was just Jensen wanted to do something cool.
Right. It was.
So I'm not putting
it
in narrative.
It wasn't Benny the vampire. It was just Benny.
No, but
it wasn't Ty at all.
Yeah, it wasn't Ty at all. Jensen requested that they put Ty in that role.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm not putting narrative stock in that, because for one, you know, again, I think it's a vision, not really. So I don't think it's Sam projecting in any way. But also,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Never had to be Benny for that scene to work. Just Jensen thought it would be cool, and it was, in terms, like, as a viewer, to see, like, that AU shift. It doesn't make any sense, because Benny was a vampire way before would have been fighting an apocalypse in any way. So it doesn't make sense. But it's a cool throwback for the audience, and, you know, we know that Jensen likes working with Ty, and he really liked the Purgatory storyline, and he enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I wondered why Benny, because there is no reason it had to be Benny. It has nothing to do with vampire or whatever, and you know, I mean, it's kind of interesting to think that way of, well, if Sam's seeing it's, you know, it's Benny and there's that whole issues, but it's not that Benny. It's just Benny, an alternative Benny. So it's okay, whatever, but it could have been somebody else, you know, if they wanted to bring somebody back in that fight scene and have it be interesting. And he didn't last that long. He came in and died.
Right. Yeah, I suspect that in the original script it was like a nobody extra character. There was no name, probably no name to the character, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And Jensen just thought it'd be nifty, but yeah. I think that's why also it's not a big role or anything, because I think it was just meant to be like soldiers in arm dude number three.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, yeah, as a viewer, it's cool, and you don't, I guess if you don't, if you're like just a casual viewer who doesn't read interviews or things like that, like we do, then you can kind of like build off of it. But, you know, unfortunately, as much as it's interesting for us to read interviews and for us to get that, since we get it not even just in real time, but before the episode even aired, we knew to expect somebody. We knew why they were coming, like that it was just a request to Jensen, that he just thought it would be cool, like yada, yada, yada. It's it's a bit of a diminished, just like, you know, giving, not trusting your audience enough and giving them Becky in the previous leave tells you that Becky's going to be in the episode. So when you see Tammy Perkins, you're like, okay, like it's cool and all, but there's no, because you don't trust your, because they don't trust their audience enough when they're cutting together the previously always spoils everything. So you get, they gave us Benny and Becky in the previously, and we were like, we all went, okay. So all the speculation that everyone was doing from the articles that from the interview Jensen did about who's coming back, who's it going to be, who's it going to be, the minute we got the previously, everyone went, oh, it's Benny.
Yeah.
I wonder if, kind of along the same vein, the actors who played the parents in this episode, they were also the parents back in season one in the Bugs episode. They're obviously playing different characters, but it was the very exact same actors. So I wonder if, again, like Jensen wanted Ty, like maybe one of these actors came in, you know, for this, and they're like, oh, it'd be cool. I remember you. It'd be cool if we could get the actor who played your husband or wife, whichever one came in, you know, again in this episode. I wonder if, you know, that was like a Jensen choice cast. You know,
I think
casting.
So. Just like he brought back Nico for The Girl Next Door. So I think it's just something that I think Jensen really likes Easter eggs like that, which when, because he is so familiar with the show, it's something he can do. So, you know, when he did The Girl Next Door, he was able to go, you know what? I look at working with the kid who was Lucas. Can we bring in Nico again? And he didn't really have, like, a big role. I don't think he had a named character. I think he was just, like, friend or something or whatever he was. But, like, I think Jensen enjoys things like that. So I wonder.
And the actress who played the principal in this episode, she was also in Appointment in Samara. That episode, she was the nurse who got killed because Dean, as when he was playing Death, would not kill the little girl, and it caused she was that nurse who got killed. So, you know, there were a lot of previous actors, you know, in this episode.
And we also know that the Vancouver actor pool isn't
right.
It's bigger. It's bigger than the British acting pool, but not by much.
Yeah, it's like you see them; they go round and round. It was the same with the X-Files. So, we see them a lot, but that's okay. What did y'all think of the scene right after the big fight scene, the veggie bacon scene, which
I don't
wasn't really like
I don't want to pick it apart the way everyone else does. I just don't understand it, though. There's a lot about it I don't understand. I don't understand since when Sam doesn't eat bacon at all to the point where he would spit it out.
Yeah, since Sam's always been a healthy eater, but he's never been a vegetarian.
And I saw a lot of people say this, like, since when is he vegan, since when is he vegetarian? Like, I eat a lot of, like, I love a steak. That's one of my favorite foods. But I also, like, my mom makes a version of beans where she uses soy chorizo and turkey bacon because I have family members who don't eat pork and don't eat beef. And it's delicious. And I will sometimes pick that version over her regular version that has beef chorizo and pork sausage and pork bacon. So, like, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's vegan or vegetarian. He just might want a healthy alternative because he is always telling me, like, you're going to die of a heart attack. And I could see Sam being like, this is not how we're going out.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, it's like, I think he makes
it was
vegetarian choices or healthy choices, but he's not that. That's the way I am. I don't eat red meat.
Yeah, I jokingly said healthy, but like when I'm eating healthy, I eat keto. So I cut out carbs. I don't cut out meat. So I'm not somebody who believes that like meat is bad for you, because carbs are what make me sick and carbs are what make me fat. But I that's not even the weird part for me. Like the fact that he asked for veggie bacon and whatever, that's not weird. What was weird was him actually spitting out the bacon. And what was weird to me was, why does Sam have to ask permission for foods all of a sudden? Like, Sam goes to the grocery store, too. We've had episodes where Sam goes to the store. But why all of a sudden does he have to ask Dee for permission for food?
Because Dean will not have that Sarah McLachlan grass, whatever.
I know that sounds
like Sarah McLachlan grass eating stuff. Yeah, because it's the meat man's kitchen.
Yeah.
That was funny, though.
The whole thing that made me think he was vegetarian, though, was because he spit it out. And
yeah,
you know,
it's like,
you know,
oh my
I got bacon.
Yeah, so. Also, he could have,
but yeah,
you know,
whatever.
People don't eat the same people don't eat the same all the time. He could have made a decision recently to eat that way. He could have, who knows? I mean, as usual, we don't get enough of an explanation. It's just all of a sudden Sam has to ask me to buy food.
Yeah, he never said
veggie bacon.
He never said he was vegetarian. He never said he was vegan. He just said he doesn't eat bacon.
Mm-hmm.
Which it could just be that he doesn't eat bacon, like, whatever. But I just thought it was a very contrived way to make a joke. The whole thing was a super contrived way to make a joke that it didn't have to be done that way. Like, we've already had, like, that. Like, we've had the healthy Sam jokes before, like, with the salad shaker. And that didn't feel awkward. It didn't feel forced. This felt like it was just because we needed to make the meat man joke. We have to make a meat joke. I don't know. It was strange.
You've talked about that before, that sometimes there's a joke and they have to write to make the joke work. So it doesn't make sense.
It's my ultimate pet peeve. And what I think what bothers me the most is that things like that become things that people will say they love. And I'm like, why do you love it, though? Like, it was okay, but why does that... Like, they'll be like, I love that episode because they did this. I'm like, you loved the whole episode for one bad joke? Okay. All right. Like, I guess that's me being judgy, but, you know, I judge. It's what I do. So, like, I think
I liked the scene.
It's funny to watch Jared and Jensen play that out. It's not genuinely a well-written or funny joke or scene. It's just fun to watch Jared and Jensen do it. Which is why, like,
I like the scene because
they say they love Yellow Fever. They'll say, I love Yellow Fever because I love Eye of the Tiger. That's not part of the episode. So, no, you don't love Yellow Fever. You like that one outtake of Jensen.
I like that outtake, and I don't care for Yellow Fever. So.
I don't. My thing with Yellow Fever, and Eileen and I have talked about it, that's not a funny episode. I can't stand when people say it's a funny episode. It's not. It's awful. It's so depressing. It's
an
so
awful
dark.
Yeah.
It's
awful.
It's a
not
horrible
funny.
Episode.
It's dark, and they make fun, and it's not funny in the least. How it's not humorous. Anyway.
Mystery
the
Spot.
Poor,
Mystery Spot is traumatic. It's not funny.
No.
Yeah. Yellow Fever. I remember our podcast for that. This was back before Vinny was with us. But all we did was talk about how horrible it was that they dragged that poor guy again.
It was disgusting.
It was horrible.
Hated it. And then I didn't think it was funny at all. And Mystery Spot is not funny, though it has slight moments of
It has funny
humor.
Moments, but like I I always say the best.
But it's
horror
not a
movie,
comedic episode.
No, the best horror movies have an alleviation of humor. If you wrote a good horror movie, there's funny moments. That does not make your horror movie a comedy.
No. And Mystery Spot is not a comedic episode, not at all. It's dark and sad and awful and tragic.
But
it is not a comedy.
But that's my semi-annual rant about Yellow Fever. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't like it either. But this scene with the bacon in it, I like the scene because Dean's worried about Sam. He can tell things aren't right, and he's caring about Sam. I said, it's brother stuff. I like it. I enjoy it. And I liked him trying to talk to Sam and getting Sam to talk to him and talking about Rowena, and he's still having a hard time. And then Dean does, you know, what he thinks will cheer them up and gets them a case, a regular case. And Sam tries to get out of it and say, oh, you know, you can do this on your own. And it, like, you know, it goes back to first season. He says, I can do it by myself. Just don't want to. And he says, oh, no, you and me, which, you know, only on Supernatural will going off to hunt down a monster be a cheery thought. But
oh, look, there's a dead girl. Yay, let's go. It'll make you feel better.
Yeah, let's go find out. Yeah, it's a dead girl, said they tore her up. There's lots of blood. You'll love it. Let's go.
Well, it is what they do. That was basically the beginning of Mint Condition last season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sam found a case and he thought
it
was cool. And let's go.
And I like that aspect of that scene about the bacon. And
yeah, I like the theory of the bacon scene. I like Jared inventing it. I just think that there's, I mean, again, it's that those who can do and those who can't teach. So, but I think that there was a better way that could have been written to make the same joke. You could have made the same joke, but written it more cohesively and coherently, which is almost I enjoyed this episode, and I actually enjoyed it more the second time than the first time, but I do feel like it was a very disjointed episode. I felt like plot A and plot B were jarring to go back and forth between, because plot A with the high school, I thought that was really good. That was really, really good. There was, like a good horror or suspense, it had the moment where you think you know, and then the moment where you think you know again, and then the reveal where the reveal was like, oh, damn, that was so good. And I miss when they showed that. And I miss the boys being wrong without being dumb. They weren't dumb. They were just wrong. And it's a very, you know, it's the same thing that happens, like, it used to happen with Supernatural. It's the same thing that always happened in, like, Law & Order, SVU, or they, like, think they know who the perp is, and then they're like, oh, no, it was him. Like, they always bring the wrong guy in first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the standard formula for SVU.
And I like that you could see it dawning on Sam when they're all in the same, in the living room, and you could see him looking and going, no, you know. It's Billy. It's you, and you just see the light dying. I thought that was just great, and I was totally like, yeah, it's the dad.
I was so excited that we were gonna get like old fashioned serial killers. I was like, oh, are we going back to like humans are the worst? Which yes, technically humans were the worst because the parents were the ones being really terrible, like really truly evil about it out of protection.
Mm-hmm.
But they were wrong. Like, the son didn't have, like, he had no control over what happened to him. He didn't need to do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But the parents were the ones who concocted an entire plan to save him. And it was really twisted and disturbing. And it's, you know, it's always that thing that I find fascinating, that folie à deux, where it's like, it's one thing for you to be like completely twisted and evil and homicidal, but how did you get somebody else to be that way with you? Like, how do you confidently pull someone into your level of crazy and them go along with it? Like, there's so much trust that involves in that, and that's something I always find fascinating. So I found the parents really kind of cool in that way, not in a, like, I think you're cool, I want to be you, but, like, you know, from a writer's point of view, like, I thought that was well constructed. But
mm-hmm.
I thought that whole storyline was well constructed, and I don't think that the Chuck and Becky scenes were bad. They weren't. I just felt like these two storylines should not have been in the same episode, because cutting them together
mm-hmm.
was very jarring to me, because tonally they were very, very different.
I think some of the Chuck and Becky scenes, they were too long. I found myself going, let's go back to the monster storyline. I mean, I get it. I know what you're trying to say. I know what's happening, but you're spending too much time in Becky's living room. You know,
I agree. There was a point with both of them, with both of the big scenes with them, where you kind of went,
mm-hmm.
okay, don't care anymore.
Yeah, I was rewatching it, and I wandered off during both of those again. Like, I heard some, but then I went off like, oh, let me see what's happening on Twitter, you know, oh, let me check this and whatever. So, yeah, but the whole monster storyline, I never left. And I don't think it's just because it was only Sam and Dean. I've heard of it, but it was just more interesting. And like you said, it was like reveal on top of a misdirect on top of a reveal on top of a misdirect, you know, and everything. And the parents, and I love how the parents, you got a hint of what they were like at the beginning when they were like, can't we just change the memorial service? You know, Billy has a scout coming, you know? So you got the idea that they'd do anything for their kid, and they didn't really care about any other kids. And then you found out how much they really did not care about other kids when they kidnapped this like poor girl to make her like a meal for their kid. And Jesus, like one of his friends, you know, not even just like a stranger. They kidnapped his other friend. and I also thought it was the other girl, Veronica, at first, thinking, oh, I'm getting the other cheerleaders out of the way so I can take over. You know, but no. So.
Yeah, it was smart twist. And Eileen just pointed out on Twitter that was the other part that was jarring too, that the Chuck and Becky scenes were so bright and suburban and, like she said, like changing channels and kind of that artificial look that, again, it really would have worked if the A storyline and the B storyline just weren't so disjointed from each other, because normally when we get two storylines like that, when you've got like, you know, primary and secondary, the secondary isn't so disconnected. So even though, like, yes, the Chuck storyline does play into what's going on with the brothers, and even like this, this episode was shot first, and it's clearly in the script, and they made sure to have Chuck, you know, acknowledge the bullet wound. So it does tie in. Tonally, it just didn't feel cohesive to me.
Let me tell you what I did not like the most about the Chuck and Becky scenes. Well, first
mm-hmm.
of all, I was glad to see Becky. We haven't seen her since season 7, Time for a Wedding, and I was glad that she's finally come to her senses. So, yay. And, you know, she's Becky, so of course I have to love her. but the thing that bugged me the most was all of the supernatural memorabilia that she had. Because as we have been told previously on this show, the supernatural books were in clearance bins. You know, they had a small following, But they, you know, weren't that popular. You know, they had that very small convention, but really, I don't think that it would have been enough to for Funko to have made pops of the actual Sam and Dean character from the book.
Look at it that way, but
Sam and Dean themselves would know, wouldn't they know that there's all this merchandise based off of them out there in the world? And, you know, they would have had to have run into it, I would think, at some point, seeing little toy figures of themselves in stores and little car replicas of the Impala and, you know, all this. That's what bugged me. I personally own many of those items that they showed, but that's because I'm watching a TV show. Becky lives in the actual world that Sam and Dean actually live in. So I didn't like that there was all this official merchandise out there. Now, if it was supposed to have all been because she had an Etsy store, so if all of that stuff was actually supposed to be stuff that she made, or maybe she made custom pops, maybe those were customs she was supposed to have made based off of other pop figures, maybe. Mm. I don't know. I could deal with that. But if it was supposed to be official merchandise, I didn't like that.
So I agree with you. I really would have rather it have been unofficial merch versus the Funkos. I think using the Funkos, this is the second time they use Funkos in the show, and I think it's such a cheap gag. I didn't like when they did it with Crowley, and I don't like it now. But I will say that in terms of, like, the convention and everything, like, it is a matter of, like, art imitating life, because you and I both know, you know, we went to the first convention, and it was, first of all, Supernatural didn't even get to be its own convention. It had to share it with two other shows. And at the time, there was no merchandise. Like, there was hardly anything you could buy. The show was, like, always, like, you know, we spent how long? Literally until Mark Pedowitz took over the CW with Don Ostroff just itching to cancel the show. And we didn't have a lot of official merch until Pedowitz came along. So that didn't strike me as weird in that instance. I personally don't like it. But it doesn't strike me as, like, canonically weird. I just don't like it. I would have really liked it to not have been so saturated with official merchandise, because I just think it's cheap and dumb.
Like,
yeah,
just
but,
her own stuff that she made would have been fine. It was really cool.
Yeah,
her stuff.
She
calls them
cool,
maquettes. They're not maquettes. They're more like dioramas or sculptures on their own.
Yeah,
but they were amazing.
But those were super cool, and, like, the poster was really cool. And but, like, I want all the dioramas, and I'm like, I'm not a collector-y type of person like that. Like, I have a few pop figures, but I'm not, like, I don't have the room for them. I basically don't have space for them, so, like, I don't buy a whole lot of things like that because I don't have a way to display them.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a few, mostly gifts, and those are the ones I display because they're unique. Like, they're not even all Supernatural. Most of them aren't, actually. And the, like, two Supernatural ones I have are customs. So I think, yeah, it would have been really cool for her to have customs. Especially, like, we have people like Lisa Rourke, who does amazing customs. I would have loved for them to have, like, gotten in touch with her and had her do a few customs for the show. That would have been really cool, because her customs are flawless. But I don't know. I guess it was to show, like, she's such a fangirl, but, like, we don't need that from Becky. We're aware.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And
the dioramas were the best.
Whereas, so. Yeah, I want that. I want Bobby's Garage and I want Harvell's Roadhouse. I want those two.
Yeah,
I want
those,
Jerry Wanick or
amazing.
Whoever created those for the show. Send them to me, please. I'm Becky. I need those. Yeah.
And they had a motel, and I'd love to see inside them. Like, I wonder if they're finished inside.
It was
and
it
out.
Was the motel from
they were
Changing
amazing.
Channels too. It was the motel from Changing Channel.
They were just wonderful.
Which I thought was cool.
Yeah. And the quilt, I mean, the quilt that Steph Arachnobite on, who did Jensen's costume, Red Hood and Batman, she made the quilt that's up on the wall. And I guess some of the other things also. And she did a beautiful job. It would not be my choice for that quilt, but I thought it was beautiful. She does beautiful work.
I like the tote bags.
I want the design.
I didn't like the quilt. I thought that I really didn't like the quilt at all. Sorry.
She does beautiful work. Just in general, she does beautiful work. It's not my thing, this particular pattern. I liked the tote bag that had the Impala on it up on the right. It had saving people hunting things, and it had the Impala on it. It's like, I like that tote bag. If I can't get a diorama, I would like that tote bag.
The chest set that was on the table, that was Sandra's.
Yeah.
Sandpal 19.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was one that wasn't the original one that she gave to Jared back a million years ago at Icon. This was one that she had made for Jensen. So it was Jensen's chest set.
Right. That's very cool. That was very cool. I saw that. Now, I have a question, and maybe I'm crazy, but did you feel that the whole Becky scenario was real? Did Chuck conjure it up to sort of get himself out of that funk, to have somebody to bounce things off of? Because he snaps everybody out of existence at the end. And so did they exist in the first place? I kind of had that thought when I was watching it. Like, you know,
That hadn't occurred to me, because I would think that he would have, if he was conjuring it himself, he wouldn't have had her so antagonistic in the beginning. Or even throughout it. Like, she was not welcoming to him at any point, which is what he wanted. He wanted someone, I mean, she literally calls him out on wanting a fluffer. And I feel like
that word you mean does not mean what you think it means, okay?
Oh, no.
I don't know. I think she knew the meaning.
That word was very, very deliberately. I really think she meant that deliberately.
That's what I thought at first, but then she says, you know, I'm not going to help your ego. I'm like, okay, that's not what it means, Becky, but of course, standards and practices.
We do refer to that as their ego. And it is what a lot hinges on.
Well, that's true, too.
I keep making tiny penis jokes about the writing staff, so.
I can't hide the fact that I say it publicly
on Twitter, so I mean, like, I'm not going to hide the fact that I say that. But I really didn't think that. I really thought she meant exactly what she meant.
Mm-hmm.
And it never occurred to me either that she didn't exist. I think she and her family actually really did. And I thought, if it comes out that they didn't, I'll be disappointed, because I really liked them showing that Becky had grown and matured, and, you know, she was still a supernatural fangirl, but she had her own life too, which, you know, as we are all supernatural fangirls, and we all do have our own lives. And also, I thought it was neat that Becky's husband's name was Rod, and my husband's name is Russ. So, you know, very kind of similar names. I like that. I think I'm glad that they made a point of Chuck saying that they're not dead. They're just not there. So I'm hoping that means Becky and her family are together in some other alternate world. You know, I just hope they're together.
Well, and
I don't want her to have a.
To me, I
don't want her to have a sad ending.
If you're going to conjure something like that,
does he have enough power? Didn't Mara say your powers are diminished?
He's trapped on Earth, but they haven't indicated that he doesn't have powers. Just that he's trapped.
Yeah,
but didn't
I think
Amara
just,
say his powers diminished?
I think he just can't leave here. Yeah, I think by that, I think from, you know, like Castiel, his powers change.
Right, they come and go. Yeah, I guess.
So he's trapped here. His whatever the gunshot wound has made him not able to go to other worlds as he used to before. But I think he still is able to do things. He's God, you know. Just one bullet wound with that gun, I don't think is going to take everything away.
Mm-hmm.
And man, oh man, we did see hints of his, you know, being evil in the past, but he just was pure out evil in this episode.
Yeah, he did. I thought Rob Benedict did a good job. I mean, sometimes he's, you know, he just goes from being sort of schlubby and, you know, dorky and chasing after Becky, and then he goes like full on malevolent. You know, like you said, evil at one point. So I think he did a good job. Do you think he wrote the end? Go ahead.
I was going to say, I thought it was neat because he's always, you know, you always think of Rob Benedict and you always think of Chuck as this little cute guy, little cute nerdy guy. But then, you know, he's like, boom, it's like, oh, no, he's pretty creepy. He's pretty scary. I don't know if I like this. So I thought that he did a really great job with that.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Do you think what they're talking and what Becky talked about as Chuck writing the end has actually any kind of real bearing on the actual end? Because supposedly the end to Supernatural is decided. I don't know if it's written, but it's decided and what's going to happen. And do you think that the cover of the book with one tombstone that says Winchester, do you think any of that is real? Is it all just smoke and mirrors? Are we going to be able to look and go, oh, yeah, well, they told us. They warned us. Becky says it's horrible. It's horrible what he does to Sam, what he does to Dean. What do you think?
Well, when he first sat down and started typing his first draft, the one that Becky ripped to shreds, at first I thought we were going to see that what he was typing was actually what was going on with Sam and Dean in their scenes.
I thought we were going to see
that, that he was typing and making changes to them. But then it didn't. Apparently what he first wrote was lame, and if Becky wouldn't have given him those notes he requested, we might not have such a scary ending to look forward to. Not saying I'm looking forward to it, but you know what I mean. And I do, I really think that is probably what they were saying is, probably, because everything Chuck said, I'm the writer, you know, he's been slowly giving digs as a writer to fans, you know, all season long. And so I really think that's the plan. Whatever he typed up there, that's what they're going for. I don't know if we're going to have him having that, you know, that's God's plan, that's Chuck's plan, that's Andrew Dabb and the writer's plan, and whether Sam and Dean are able to fight against it. I guess we'll have to see, but that's what I think.
Yeah. And Dean says, you know, he feels free. I feel sorry for him because he's so not free. Chuck is still around and still trying to be manipulative. But yeah, And Chuck says at the end, you know, I'm God. No, he says, I'm the writer. And I don't know. I'm tired of that, and I'm tired of them poking fun at fanfic and fan writers, because there are some fan writers that are a million times better than pro writers out there. There are pro writers who started as fanfic writers. And I'm glad Becky, you know, stood up and said that, you know, I'm still a writer, you know, and she is.
My issue with all
that
is also, it doesn't figure out what you're trying to tell me, because on one hand, you're telling me to respect the fandom and respect the fanfic writers and to respect the ones buying your merchandise and all this, and then you flip it and show utter disrespect and contempt. And I don't understand what you're trying to say, and I don't think they understand what they're trying to say. I think, again, it is going back to, I need to make a little funny point. I need to like make sure I tie it all together, and this is the route I'm going to go, and I don't require coherency for it. And I keep saying this, and I don't feel that Davey Fettes wrote those scenes, because they feel exactly like every scene Andrew Dabb has done in the same vein. You know, in season, what was it, 9, 10? I knew earlier and now I forgot. When they, you know, he has Sam and Dean make fun of the fandom avatar, and it's something that he seems very adamant about doing, which I think is very peculiar coming from someone like him who is clearly a fanboy himself of things.
Mm-hmm.
I find his bitterness towards fandom very strange, and I don't know if it's because he operates in a fandom that's primarily female, and that's his issue. I don't know. I mean, I'm not his therapist, but I do find it very strange overall, and I really don't think that those scenes were Davies. I really don't, because they just felt exactly like the way Andrew writes. And
it explains
and so
why
I
wandered off during them.
I don't understand what the point is. I don't understand what the point of constantly telling us that we're important, but we're also nobody. I don't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't need to bring fandom into it at all. And it goes back to my issue with, like, the 200th episode. It's this idea they have that everybody who watches the show is also part of fandom. And they're not. You have a general audience who is not a part of fandom. The majority of people watching your show are not in fandom. Stop writing for fandom. Stop talking to us so directly. Under Eric and Sarah, the meta was not so heavy-handed. It was not so deliberate to fandom. It had layers, and it was more about meta, about television in general. And, you know, like, even with the books, like, you know, Eric chose to go the route of having supernatural books, which are not unusual because you have, you know, going back to Star Wars books and things like that. It wasn't odd. It wasn't specific. And he, instead of making it a show, he made it a book. And, you know, I don't understand the contempt.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't understand. I don't understand being so angry with people who are essentially making sure that you have a job, but also, you have to understand that, like, this is the only show that I'm currently in a fandom for. So if I was watching, like, I just recently watched all of Sherlock. I was not in that fandom. I'm not in that fandom. I don't care about the fandom aspect. So if they were writing episodes for fandom in Sherlock, I'd be thoroughly confused. So even though that's a show that had a big fandom, it has a general audience. You know, I don't understand it.
I don't either. I actually made in my notes, I said, why is Andrew Dabb so angry at people who have basically written his paycheck for years? You know?
Yeah.
It's like,
it's a very bizarre resentment. To be angry at the people,
it's like,
who,
why?
To be angry at the people who care about what you do and partially made sure you had a job, or and not only that, that gave him the leeway to write characters that, because I firmly believe that without fandom and without the convention, most of the characters that we see come back over and over would not have come back over and over. They wouldn't have. It's the conventions that gave the writers the... I can't even think of the word. Oh, my medication's kicking in again. Not the comfort, but the... whatever. It
security?
Made them realize that they could pick back a character, huh?
Security?
Sure, we'll use
comfort?
That. Not what I want, but that works
okay.
too. No, I don't. I really don't know the word. But
I'm sorry. I tried.
It gave them the ability to say, like, oh, we can bring back Gabriel. I don't think that if the Phantoms didn't exist and Rob and Rich weren't, you know, the MCs of all the conventions, that they would have even brought back Chuck, let alone Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Wayward Sisters attempt would have happened. I don't think those things would occur. And it goes to show that your fandom is not your fan base. But that said, it gave them the ability to try and do these things and to find a fallback in bringing back the same characters over and over. And yet, there's such a current of resentment for us when we don't make money off of it. We don't, you know, we're not bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do feel like you're bothered, you know, you have the option to turn your Twitter off.
Yeah. So there's way too much fandom show crossover. It used to be much more separate, like what you did in fandom and the reality of, say, maybe getting to go to a convention and maybe getting to meet an actor or getting to know a writer or whatever. There's the lines are so blurred, and they're at a point where many fans feel so entitled to get what they want, or why doesn't the showrunner or the writer, you know, change their entire character and story premise to make it the way I want it and what I see in your show. And there's that aspects of Supernatural, but I'm thinking of a completely different show and a different pairing. And I actually saw someone on my Facebook get enraged at another showrunner that how dare he not make these two lead characters that are partners in a legal agency, I'll say, how dare he not just go all the way with them and make them a couple? And I'm like, because it's not your show, you know? And enjoy your fanfic and your fan art, but just let this guy run his own show. And she bullied him so much that he blocked her on Twitter. And let me tell you, he's a real easygoing, fanish kind of showrunner, so she must have made him angry. But I think that's a big issue these days, so it, you know, and then maybe some of them let it in too much, and like you said, if you don't want to know, don't go on Twitter. It's like you often mention Brad and Eugenie, who aren't on social media, so they get to write whatever, and they don't always like it or agree with it, but I don't think they're influenced by that.
No, and I think, I don't know, I think it's interesting to know that you have, and I don't just mean particularly Supernatural, but in general, to know that a fan base is not a homogenous thing, and to still use the term the fans, I find that just, I find it lazy. Bottom line, it's lazy. And I resent having a final season of a show that's gone on for this long be cheap, lazy, and spiteful. I find it so insulting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get why.
On a
I really don't. But anyway, strayed far from comic monsters.
On a completely different tangent, I was going to say I really like the use of Jensen's song in this episode. The radio company song, his and Steve Carlson's. It was really moody, and it fit the scene so really well. I had heard the song before. I hadn't bought it yet, but I had heard it once or twice before, and I liked it, but I wasn't ooh, this is my favorite song, until it like hit that scene, and then now that's like all been in my head all day long, because I love the moodiness of the song fitting the moodiness of the scene. And then also during that scene, while the music's playing, when they show the boy down on his knees as Dean's getting ready to chop off his head, I love how it's kind of in slow motion, and Sam, I love that that's one consistency with Sam that we've always seen, that he never likes to watch when Dean's killing something or somebody. He always turns his head, and he slowly turns his head to the right as Dean's getting ready, going out to chop the kid's head off. It was just such a beautiful, moody scene, if you can say beautiful over somebody chopping somebody else's head off. But
yeah.
It's just really
it
dark
beautiful.
And moody.
I agree with you. It was beautifully shot.
Jensen's
and
directing.
The music was perfect.
Jensen's directing for this whole episode, but especially during that scene, I thought was top-notch. And when you think about it, here's Dean Winchester played by Jensen Ackles being directed by Jensen Ackles with music by Jensen Ackles playing over the scene.
Yeah.
It seems a little narcissistic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it seems a little narcissistic when you think about it. But if you're Jensen Ackles, you can do it, because he hit everything out of the ballpark, and it was just a fantastic episode, and that scene in particular was just awesome.
It was beautiful, and it made me think of, last week Sam had to kill Rowena. This week Dean had to take care of the monster. There was, there was no way that Sam was going to do it, or Dean would let him do it. And I rewatching again, it broke my heart all over again, because they do have a crap job. They do. And, they take the weight so other people can be happy. And it just made me sad. And their whole talk in the car at the very end, it was painful. I mean, the way Sam talked about how sometimes it was so overwhelming that he can't breathe. And Dean talking about how, they do it for Jack and for Mom and Rowena. He says, everybody, whoever believed in us, that's the reason we keep putting one foot in front of the other. And it's I've always known that. That's always what they do. But it just got me during that scene, that how difficult their life is, how difficult it is, and they just made me sad. And it was hard to hear Sam. And I was glad that he was talking to Dean. I was glad that he was telling him how he felt when he said, "I still think of Jessica." I was like, "Oh my God, that's 15 years ago." It was beautiful.
Yeah, I loved it.
But like you said, how something so tragic can be so beautiful. Yeah, yeah. And I know what he means. He says, it's like, it's not that he can't let it go, but that loss is still a part of him. It's still there. You have that loss and you move on, but it colors everything about you. It doesn't control you, but it colors your life and how you think and feel. And think how many people they have lost between the two of them. So yeah, I thought it was gorgeous.
It reminded me a lot from how you were talking about your feelings and how you thought about it, and what Sam was saying to Dean. It reminded me so much back in season two, Heart, when Sam had to kill Maddie, the werewolf, and how Mm-hmm. I remember that night after that episode aired, telling my husband, that episode broke me. And I was like, I don't understand how they're going to go on. I said, how can you recover from something like that? You know, this is way back in season two, and look what all they've gone through since then. And yeah, it's just the horrible things that they have had to do and witness, and it's just, I know they're TV characters and all, they're not real, but it's mm-hmm. heartbreaking to think about.
Well, it's a credit to them and their skill that, you know, they're not real, but it doesn't matter because they make you feel that, you know, so definitely. Okay. And, you know, I felt bad about Billy. I mean, he didn't mean to become a vampire, and his parents handled it really horribly. And yes, he killed his girlfriend, Susie. But I still, the way he played it, it still was so tragic. I mean, I felt bad for him. And I thought, you know, he could have run away, he could have gone rogue, but he stayed, and when he got caught,
yeah,
he just faced what he had to do.
That part kind of reminded me of Bitten, the werewolf episode, because, you know, we're seeing, you know, the actual monster, you know, what they're going through, and how they're taking on the responsibility. I got a lot of Bitten vibes there, which I know Bitten isn't one of the most popular episodes in fandom, but I still love that episode a lot. It's so
mm-hmm.
emotional. I just really like that episode. And so that scene did remind me a lot of that. And when I think about it, you know, it's like I try to think, because I'm a parent to I have two sons, and I think, you know, God forbid something horrible
mm-hmm.
like that was to happen to them. You know, I honestly wouldn't know what to do, because you don't want to lose your son, but you don't want them to become killers. But I'm pretty darn sure kidnapping girls and putting them in the basement, you know, and I wouldn't be still out there, you know, trying to get my son into college and all this stuff. I'd be just trying to figure out how he's going to survive. So those parents were a little wackadoo, but yeah, it was.
Oh yeah, they were unstable in the first place. You know,
yeah.
They. I mean, to want to cancel that other girl's memorial just so the scout could come and see their kids.
Yeah, the scout was coming. I mean, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's horrible.
They didn't really care about the girls that they were having to kill. They were just horrible people to begin with.
Yep. And that just made them more horrible. And like I said, you know, Billy was a vampire, and yes, he killed Susie and was okay enough with feeding off of Tori, but you could tell it was bothering him and he didn't mean to. And, you know, he was a new vampire, didn't know what he was doing. But when it came time, he said, you know, this is enough. And he stopped his parents. And when he says to Dean, he says, isn't that how this ends? You know, we go for a ride. Isn't that how this ends? And which I thought was.
I just noticed, by the way, we lost
Benny.
When did we lose Benny?
She got your text. She signed off. She's not feeling well.
I hope she's okay. Oh, okay. I hope she's sorry to hear that.
She texted.
Okay. But yeah, so it was a little off there.
Yeah. And like you said, that's when Jensen's song, Sounds of Someday, started playing, and it just fit beautifully. It really did. and that was a beautiful scene where Dean kills him. I mean, we beautifully shot, beautifully directed, and just so sad. You can tell. Poor Sam. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say it's not episode related, but we did find out today that starting in March 16th, I think, Supernatural's moving into Mondays, which I think is, you know, going to be weird.
It is weird. Is that the only
that
they've never been on?
I believe it is, actually, because they reruns did run for a little bit back a long time ago on Sundays. And, you know, they started off on Tuesdays, so I believe it is. I believe Monday is the only night that CW airs shows that it. So they'll have covered it all. So I guess it's good.
Yeah,
they can say they covered it all.
I mean, it bothers me. I'm like, really, for the last set of episodes, you're changing the night. You know, after years at Thursday. I mean, couldn't you just left it? I mean, it's like probably by then it's going to be what, like maybe 6 or 7 more episodes. And I'm like, why change it now? And I know they do it because like Supernatural's their heavy lifter because they put the new show on Thursday. I guess I think it's Katie Keene is going with Legacies, and Arrow's finale is in March. So they're going to take over Arrow's spot on Monday night, I guess. And it's still a compliment to how they feel Supernatural is so strong, but it kind of bugged me, you know. I'm like, really, another move? But okay.
And then the series finale is going to be May 18th. So
I thought it'd be earlier. I mean, I know that
I did too.
From your when they had the
because they have. They have less episodes this year, so I thought it would be earlier. So I guess there's going to be some big spans in there where we don't have episodes.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to do like a special at the end, like a, you know, kind of a review
they
and wrap up and highlights? They should.
They really, really
anybody
should
deserves
because,
what they do.
You know, it's the longest running genre television of all time. In the U.S., you know, of course, Doctor Who over in the U.K. has everything else. But
no one will ever catch up to that.
And it's the only show still airing on television that originally was on the WB. So
that's right.
Yeah, it definitely deserves a big send-off. So I hope it gets what it deserves.
Yeah, something special. I don't know.
Oh, real quick, what I remember something I was going to mention. The high school in this episode was the same high school that they used for Truman High, Home of the Bombers, back, you know, for Sam and Dean's high school. It's the same. They used the same building. So I thought that was cool.
And it was Beaverdale High School. Is that for Jim Beaver?
Mm-hmm.
And Beaverdale,
Riverdale?
Oh, I
haven't thought about that. I wonder.
Jim Beaver.
I hadn't put that together.
And
but
the mascot
convinced.
Was a beaver, which amused me, of
and
course.
Dean,
but, yeah.
And I love that Dean loved that beaver. I love how much he loved that beaver kid.
Well, yes, he does.
I wasn't going to go there, but okay.
Hey, they mentioned fluffing in this episode, so why
That's
not?
That's true.
Yes, it was quite amusing. But on an only slightly more serious note, this is very common of Dean to be able to talk to and get along with everybody, and not assume just because he was the mascot that he'd be, you know, clueless or too, you know, nerdy and not have any inside knowledge. And he's like, talk to the mascot. They know everything, you know, like, yeah, right. They're always, you know, on the sidelines. So I thought that was fun. And we saw Dean
drinking again, and people mentioned it, and some people said, yeah, and they always drink. Maybe we don't always see him drinking on a case wearing his FBI suit. I'm trying to think. I mean, we know Dean drinks. They both do. Dean may drink more than Sam, but I didn't think it was that unusual for Dean to be drinking. I thought he ate a lot in this episode. I did notice, like, he was always munching. He had pretzels, and again, Dean eats, but it seemed like more snacky than usual, and it didn't have a point that I could see. But I was like, maybe it had a point and it got edited out. I don't know.
Well, do we have anything else to talk about?
We don't have any theories on why Dean was snacking so much.
No, I just think
it's like
that's just Dean.
I know. I'm being silly. well, another thing I noticed, the cheerleader, Billy's girlfriend, is named Susie. And then the girl, Veronica, who at her memorial service rehearsal, quotes Robert Frost, "Nothing gold can stay." So I think both of those things are acknowledging Essie Hinton, whose name is Susie.
Oh,
and of course,
yeah.
It's a famous
stay
quote
gold.
That she uses in her book, The Outsiders. Yeah, stay gold. So I'm sure that's a nod to her, if anybody was wondering. And just another trivial thing, but I noticed it, is that Becky's husband, Becky gives him the motion sickness pills for the kids, and he said, we're only going to Lake Michigan. And, like, Lake Michigan can be like an ocean. It can be more rough. So you're going to need those motion sickness pills. That's all I could think. It's like, you've been on Lake Michigan? It's pretty crazy. So, anyway. I'm looking. I don't. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. One other thing. Becky says she was writing fan fiction where Sam and Dean sit around and do their laundry, and talk, because of course that's what we like, and we don't like monsters. Fans don't like monsters, and we like both. You know, we like monsters, and we also like Sam and Dean sitting around doing their laundry. And I think that was one of Jensen's suggestions in some article. He says, you know, we should. You know, Sam and Dean sitting around. I think he said Sam and Dean sitting around their underwear doing their laundry. At the laundry.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
I would watch that episode. You know, so I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So I like that Becky writes that kind of fic. You know, and I agree with you. I like that Becky seemed to have moved on or moved forward, and she did do some bad things, and she knew that to Sam, but at least she tried to get through it and move on. And she never should have let Chuck in the house. Like when she said, you know, go away and you're not my problem, it should have ended there. She should have slammed the door in his face and locked it, because things did not go well. But, and you know, that's what, like, predatory guys do. They prey on, like, the girl's sympathy or an ex's sympathy, you know? So that's actually pretty scary, but I felt sorry for her. And yeah, hopefully she's with her family wherever they Chuck sent them. They're all together, like you said. That is weird. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. No other news, right? Well, Jensen's album came out today. If anybody's interested, you can get it on the iTunes, as they say, among other places.
$8.99. I got mine today.
Yep. I did. I did too. I haven't listened yet, except for the bits and pieces we've heard everywhere, but I haven't had a chance to listen.
Mm-hmm.
But I will, because I do like him and Steve's voices. I like their singing. Do you have any other news or thoughts? Or?
I can't think of a thing.
All right. Well, this is a good episode. Good discussion. I really liked it. And I think next week's definitely has possibilities from that preview.
Yeah, that I'm dying to find out why they're using old IDs. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, definitely. And I like their undercover costumes, this kind of good old boy, because
mm-hmm.
we usually just get to see FBI. So it's a nice change. So, and it looks like just the boys hunting again. So I like that. So anyway,
yeah.
Thanks everybody for listening. We had a real good discussion and episode to talk about tonight. So good job directing Jensen. And that's it. Thanks so much everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, I'm Jared Padalecki.
And this is Jensen Ackles.
And you're listening to Winchester Radio.